Welcome to the Connected Leadership Podcast by Zentano, for forward-thinking leaders who want to lead with confidence, clarity, and impact. We bring you grounded wisdom, real stories from real leaders, conversations that leave you thinking differently, feeling inspired, and ready to act. Let's dive in. So welcome once again to the newly rebranded The Connected Leadership Podcast by Zentano. This is episode 5 in our Confidence in Leadership series. And in this episode, we're going to look at a very particular kind of discomfort, the feeling that you're doing a senior job, but you don't fully own that role yet. Now, Rich, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. Thank you.
I know you love your Formula One, Rich. So here's an analogy for you, just to explain what I've just said. Imagine, Rich, you're in the driver's seat of a Formula One car, driving at very high speeds and managing all those complex controls really successfully. Yet you feel like a backseat driver who has somehow scrambled into the front seat and to take the wheel, and you're driving with the constant fear you're about to crash at the next big turn. That's what we're talking about. That's what it feels like. So today's conversation is about understanding why self-doubt often persists despite the experience, the promotion you've had, the positive feedback you've had, and to see that confidence as an identity shift, it's not just a skills issue. So Rich, we see lots of leaders who've got the title, they've got the track record, they've got the promotion, but inside they still feel like that new kid in the room. I'd like to tap into your expertise here. What's going on in this scenario?
Well, traditionally when people have talked about confidence, and if you read quite a lot of confidence books, they might focus on one of two things. So sometimes people equate confidence with your ability to do stuff. In other words, what we call competence. So you have confidence in your capability to do something. But as we all know, there are times where we have the capability, but we don't feel, we still don't feel confident. So that's one aspect of confidence. The other aspect of confidence that sometimes confidence books focus in on is what I call our self-worth. So what are we feeling inside, and do we feel actually that we are worth it in a particular situation? How are we comparing ourselves to people around us? Is that comparison healthy? And, you know, do we think that we have what it takes to be in that situation? So often they're treated as two separate things, competence and self-worth. Now, when we talk about confidence, and we talk about this on our online confidence pathway that we've just developed, and it's going live next week. So when we talk about confidence, we talk about, we bring those two things together, the competence or the capability and the self-worth, because actually they interact in really quite complicated, subtle ways. So we're going to explore one aspect of how the competence and the self-worth, how they relate to each other in the context of how confident we feel in any given situation. So for example, you know, picking up on the point you make, many senior leaders might be in a position where they genuinely have all the capabilities, all the competencies that's needed for that role. There might be some gaps, and we'll come back to that later in the podcast. But sometimes, despite the fact they have all the competence, they perhaps don't feel that they're ready, or they don't feel confident, that feeling. So internally, maybe they're thinking that I'm faking it or I'm going to get found out, classically called the imposter syndrome by a lot of people out there. So in other words, it's not about lack of competence. It's almost like an identity tag, an inner story that's been triggered, where their inner story hasn't caught up with the role that they're actually in.
Now, Rich, you've talked before on this podcast about your own relationship with confidence. You know, you've been through a whole journey on that, and I know you did a huge amount of research, which we're now tapping into for our program. But can you share a time when you were in a role and you didn't feel like you belonged in it. So you were like that, you know, in that Formula One car, and you were just waiting to crash, basically.
Yeah. Okay. So how long you got?
Well, go on. I'll give you 5 minutes. Go on.
Well, to be honest, you know, sometimes I feel like that, you know, when I'm running workshops for Zentano, there are a lot of senior people in the room. I'm stood out the front facilitating or training or whatever. And then sometimes I think, why are they listening to me?
Well, I think the same thing sometimes, Rich, but...
Yes, indeed. So a lot of this stuff goes back to our childhood. I remember, I think I've shared some of this story before, but... Yeah, my mother constantly instilled in me this inner narrative around how she felt, mm-hmm. personally, how she felt around what she called clever people.
Yeah.
So often she would refer to teachers or to doctors as clever people. In other words, people we have to look up to. Mm-hmm. So there was an inherent power imbalance that was instilled in me from how she perceived people in authority.
Yeah.
Or how she perceived people who she perceived to be cleverer than her.
Okay.
And actually, you know, knowing my mum, my mum actually is a clever person.
Yeah.
But she often does herself down as a result. So those inner narratives, I sort of imbibed that as a child.
Yes.
And I took those inner stories, those inner narratives, into roles I was in organisations that I worked for. So, for example, I could walk into a room in an organisation. There were lots of senior people in the room, and I might have just the competences or the capabilities needed to be in that room, but I would feel lesser than the people in the room.
Yeah, and that's what you just said just now, wasn't it? You could that can still be triggered in the current environment, even though you have got the competency and you've got a wealth of experience. A wealth of skills. That because it was ingrained at a young age, that story is still there somewhere in the background.
Yeah. And people listening to this podcast, they would have had different upbringings to me. They might have had similar upbringings to me. So those inner narratives will play out subtly and differently. And today we're going to talk about a particular mask that we talk about in the confidence pathway called the self-doubter mask. But there are three other masks as well where confidence shows itself up in an unhealthy way in quite subtly different ways. So we explore on our online pathway how a lot of these inner narratives play out in the current context where we hold up a mask to try and keep us safe. And sometimes those masks are serving us well, but often they're not.
Yeah, and it's interesting you talk about that narrative installed in you from a younger age. Now, that's basically mm-hmm. where you're comparing yourself to other people. I do wonder, in the age that we're growing up in now, where it's much easier to compare yourself with people because look at what social media does. It makes it so much easier to make comparison. I do wonder whether this problem's going to get worse rather than better, because it's very, very easy to look at other people and think they're better than me, they're more talented, they're more whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's not going to be helpful for a lot of people. So,
I think that's a really good point because, social media is all about us portraying ourselves and almost like portraying, if I want to be slightly controversial, a fake persona often.
Yeah.
And then we see those fake personas, which are not reality. We compare ourselves unfavorably to those fake personas that we see on social media. And that then starts to drive those inner stories, those inner narratives that develop. So if people are on social media from a young age, potentially, I'm not saying always, but potentially, it could have quite a debilitating effect on this self-worth aspect of confidence that we're talking about.
Yeah. So going back to your experience, what shifted you from that deferential sort of self-doubting version of yourself to something a little bit more grounded? How did you start to make that shift?
Well, some of that came through some personal coaching that I received at the time. But also when I did my master's in coaching and mentoring, one of the topic areas that we explored in quite a lot of detail was this concept, psychological concept of the parent, the adult and the child.
Yeah.
And we can talk in more detail about that in another podcast, and we have done in previous podcasts. But I came across this idea of actually being the adult in the room. So okay. In other words, this is this healthy, connected space where we're not unhealthily comparing ourselves to other people. We believe we have value to bring to the room, and we believe other people have value in the room. So that power is in balance, so to speak. There are healthy and unhealthy parent and child states that are at play. So when I researched this psychological concept of the parent and adult and child, what I realised was I was projecting my childhood insecurities on basically fake parent figures.
Yes, you know? Yeah.
Or figures of authority. So in other words, those leaders in the room, I wasn't connecting with them as the leaders they actually were, the adults that they actually were in the room. I was projecting my insecurities. So I was seeing them as basically those clever doctors or those clever teachers that the narrative I'd inherited from my mother. So it's basically a projection thing, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm guessing what you then realized is over time that I'm actually okay with who I am, and I want to bring that version of me to the room rather than a fake exactly. version of me. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So in our confidence compass, we talk about the connected center in our confidence compass. And our confidence compass consists of the competence axis and the self-worth axis and how they relate together.
Yeah.
And at the center of that model, that compass, the connected center shows itself up in lots of different psychological models out there. But, you know, the adult state is one of the examples of that. That's how we feel when we feel connected and grounded and authentic, and there's no unhealthy comparisons going on, and we have a realistic view of ourselves and our capabilities.
So for anybody who hasn't listened to episodes 1 to 4 of this podcast, and we have talked about the confidence compass idea before, so remember about what Rich said at the beginning of this podcast, there's two axes here. There's two elements, if you like, to confidence. There's the competence, your capability, and there's your self-worth. Mm-hmm. And those are interacting axes on your competence compass model, Rich.
So yes.
How does using that methodology, imagining it as a compass, as you said, where you don't want to be in the extremes around the edge, you want to be in this connected center in the middle where you're grounded, you're more acting more adult, as you said, in a psychological way. How does that help leaders understand their confidence patterns?
Okay. So as I said before, everyone listening to this podcast will have different narratives, different stories that they've inherited through their upbringing, you know, the values and beliefs that have been instilled in them through their childhood, through their 20s and their 30s or whatever. So all of those things make up the internal wiring that shape, you know, what brings us as an adult into the room right now. And that would be subtly different for each person listening. So with the confidence compass, with the competence axis and the self-worth axis, imagine that is a quadrant grid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because often a lot of these psychological models are quadrants.
They are.
Each of those quadrants represents how competence and self-worth interact in subtly different ways.
Yeah.
Okay. So today we're talking about one of those masks, one of those quadrant patterns that we call the self-doubter. So in other words, the self-doubter tends to put down their capabilities. So they often will not recognize the strengths that they have. Or if somebody points out a capability or a strength, they will have a tendency either to ignore what they're being told or to put themselves down in some way, subtly or explicitly. So in other words, their view of self, there's a gap between their view of self and their actual competence and abilities. Okay. So some of the other masks have a very different relationship between view of self and competence, but the self-doubter, they tend to put themselves down from a competence perspective. On the self-worth side, they also put themselves down from a self-worth perspective. So they unfavorably, as we've talked about, compare themselves to those around them. So take those two things together, and you don't have a great combination, do you, really? And that's what we call the self-doubter mask.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, that's not great at any stage of your career. I guess it's going to be more of a problem the more senior you become, because you're going to be more visible. Yeah. You've got to take, you know, bigger decisions. So what does that tell us about self-doubt at those senior levels, Rich?
So what happens with these masks? These masks are a silly thing. These masks aren't something to be ashamed of. So these are the masks that we pull out when we're often under pressure or feel stressed or in situations where we're being tested in some way.
Yeah.
So if, for example, your competence, your capability, your strengths are being tested, like an F1 driver, for example.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have a healthy view of that capability and you don't have a healthy view of self, your self-worth, what you'll tend to do is to bring out this mask as a protective mechanism.
Yeah.
So so the big question is, is the mask that you're bringing out, are you bringing it out in a way that's healthy and is it serving you well in a situation? Because actually, if the self-doubter masks come up, for example, and you're in a stressful situation, it might be your fear response telling you actually that your capability, there's a gap between what's needed from you in this situation and your actual capability. And you need to go away and do something about that capability gap, or acknowledge actually that there is a gap and not pretend.
Yeah. So let's dive a bit deeper into this self-doubter mask, because I think this is really interesting. So talked about this. Obviously, there's some fear behind this, and that fear might be real. It might be something worth listening to, or it might be irrational. Yes, yeah. It might be an irrational fear. But you talked also about the importance of identity here. So what sort of narratives might somebody who is got a tendency to wear this self-doubter mask, what sort of narratives might they be saying? How will that be showing up inside their head in a senior role?
Yeah. So remember, so it's playing out against these two aspects, competence and self-worth. Okay.
Yeah.
So it might be something like this persistent idea of I'm not enough, I'm not good enough. Or if I say something, people are going to think I'm stupid. Actually, you know, my capability compared to the other people in the room is much lower than actually it actually is.
It is. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So you might be putting yourself down in those ways. It might show as hesitation to speak up.
Okay.
When you have senior people around you. You might be second guessing the contributions that you want to make. So there'll be hesitancy to speak. So your voice will tend either not to be heard because you will self-censor, because you doubt your capability. It might actually show up as you seeking reassurance too much.
Yeah.
Okay. So all human beings, you know, want social validation.
Yeah, of
and,
course.
You know, and we like feedback to know we're doing a good job. But the self-doubter might have a tendency to overseek that reassurance.
I'm guessing they might also deflect it if they get it as well.
Yes, and they might. Yeah, so it plays out weirdly, actually. So they might have a tendency to over-prepare because of their perceived lack of capability.
Yeah.
Or as you've said, actually, this idea of deflecting praise, so they might have a difficulty actually owning their achievements.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So they achieve something significant, they get great feedback from the people around them, and they'll say something like, oh, that's nothing, you know, not really anything. So they have a tendency to put themselves down.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe for me, what was quite interesting, because you're talking about the senior roles I was in the past. So there were definitely times where I didn't feel like I was worth the salary I was being paid. That unhealthy comparison.
Oh, okay.
You know, almost like, I'm lucky to be here. Why the hell are they paying me this money?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And I'd imagine that's a lot more common than people think it is.
Yes. Yeah. Without a doubt. So that's an example, if you like, of how the self-doubter mask plays out. As we said, there are three other masks that we explore in our online sort of confidence pathway. But this gives a flavour of of what the self-doubter mask looks and feels like.
Yeah, and I want to just explore that more because I think, you know, if I said it, it's probably more common than people think. I do know, I saw a stat the other day, I think it was 70% of people at some point in their career are going to suffer from imposter syndrome, which is what we're talking about. What we're talking about. Okay. That's a lot of people. Yeah. 7 out of every 10 people is a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, I also recognize it. I've, at times when I've had that myself, Rich, probably not in the same way as you did and not with the same narratives. So I don't I never questioned whether I was worth the money I was being paid, but it played out in a slightly different way. But it was still imposter. Okay. It was still imposter syndrome at the end of the day.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, that statistic you mentioned there is quite interesting because anecdotally, I often sell myself as a confidence coach or a leadership confidence coach. And I'll put that in my biogs and stuff like that. And often people come to me for confidence coaching in the context of leadership. Mm. It's a very common thing that people come to me for coaching for. So it's that. So my anecdotal evidence actually correlates with that research you've quoted.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think it's a big issue, and I think it's an issue that, you know, we need to help people with. So what changes, when you're a leader, Rich, you know, what changes can you start to make to move away from the extreme situation to the connected centre? So like you said, rather than sitting at the edge of all of this and having all these unhelpful narratives and all these unhelpful thoughts, let's go back into our connected centre where we feel more grounded. How do we start to do that as a leader?
Yeah. So the first step is to realise, it's going back to the point I was making earlier, is masks aren't the enemy, it's unconscious masks are. So what we want to do is to bring self-awareness to the situation.
Right.
And ask ourselves the question, what is the fear actually telling me?
Okay. You know,
or are we projecting a tiger onto the situation?
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by that, are we imagining there to be a tiger in the room as opposed to, is there really a tiger in the room?
Yeah.
You know, so as I said before, you know, it might be you're in a situation where there's a genuine gap of capability or whatever. So what is it that you need to do about that? So, but in terms of actually bringing yourself back to this connected center to inhabit your authority, in other words, so you want to own the role that you're in. So if you have the capability and you have a realistic view of your strengths and your weaknesses, so there's no delusion here, or there's no underinflating of your strengths.
And okay? you can still own the role even if you've got strength gaps.
Exactly right. But it's about owning that authentically and understanding this is where I am, this is okay. And actually, I'm enough for this.
Yeah.
And actually, as a person in the room, you know, the organization have paid me this money for this capability. And actually, in terms of my voice and in terms of what I bring to this room, I'm enough. I'm worth it. And I'm not putting myself down in relation to other people.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing is we're spending less energy on self-monitoring and more on, if you like, connecting with ourselves and connecting with the other people in a healthy way as opposed to an unhealthy way.
Yeah.
So there'll be this openness to feedback without us collapsing in on ourselves.
Yeah.
So the self-doubter is what we call the diminishing mask. So we go in on ourselves, and if we step into the connected center, it's almost like we flourish and we allow our voice, we allow our capability to shine in the room in an authentic way. So this is not pretending.
No.
But this is not allowing the unhealthy self-worth narrative to get in the way of your capabilities.
So how do we, if we start to own the role, if we start to get into our connected center, so we own the role rather than just trying to perform it, and there's a big difference here, isn't there?
There is a big difference. Yeah, that's a good point. That's
so what does
point.
It feel like when you start to own the role, when you've been on this journey, what does it, when you start to own the role, how does that feel different from just simply performing it?
Yeah. So this is not arrogance. We've talked about true humility, you know, before. So this is actually being okay with who we are, warts and all, but actually really leaning in to the strengths and the capabilities that we have,
mm-hmm.
And putting ourselves into situations where we allow ourselves to be stretched, we allow ourselves to grow and develop. The danger with the self-doubter mask, as I said, it's a diminishing mask. We go in on ourselves. So then what we then do is we hesitate to put ourselves into situations where that's going to be tested. Yeah?
Yeah.
Because if we're tested, we might be shown up or perceived that we're going to be shown up. So we hesitate to put ourselves into situations where we're going to be tested. And it's important to say, you know, this is definitely not performative, as you said. I think that's a really good word.
Mm.
And it's definitely not arrogance, because arrogance is performative,
yes.
I think.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. Okay, so let's get a little bit more practical now. So if there's somebody listening mm-hmm. to us thinking, well, yeah, I recognize this in myself. I have a tendency to slip into wearing this mask. And if you know that, you probably have got a good understanding of some of the reasons why you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to get a bit more practical. How do we actually make this shift that we're talking about? Now, I know on this podcast before, and we will say it again in the future, one of the most important things for any leader to do to develop themselves is to do reflective practice. If you don't do the hard work on yourself, don't expect to be a better version of yourself. I think Nick Marlowe, when he came on the podcast, he made that, you know, very clear in his interview I did with him.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do the hard work on ourselves to find the better place we want to get to. So, Rich, can you offer a couple of reflective practices that can help listeners start this identity shift?
Yeah, so the first thing I would say is to identify the unhealthy narratives. So recognize when, you know, that you're projecting something from mm-hmm. your background or whatever onto the situation.
Okay.
And to come up with, it's almost like a replacement mantra for that unhealthy story.
Yeah.
So, in other words, what we're trying to do, we call it reframing in psychology, in sort of psychological language. So in other words, we take the unhelpful story, unhelpful narrative, and we have a replacement mantra.
Yes.
So something I used to tell myself, it's less so now because it's become more instilled in me, but I will often say something like, I'm the adult in the room.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And to, you know, to really sort of embed that and to live that and to step into that. Because what's really interesting around psychology is how we think influences how we feel, and how we feel then influences how we behave. So if we can change the way we think about a situation, that will change the way we feel and behave about a situation. They're all interrelated. So don't dismiss this idea of reframing and having mantras is positive psychology nonsense.
No. Okay?
It has its roots in good neuroscience, because basically what you're doing by reframing and using the mantra and replaying that mantra in each situation where you're being tested is you're basically rewiring the brain.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just to be clear, because some people listen to you say that, and I know you say this inside your head, you're not necessarily saying it out loud.
No, I am
the adult in the room could sound arrogant. It could mean, well, I'm the adult and nobody else is. That's not what you're saying here, is it? So just be clear.
When you're
saying, and it's, I think it's a good thing to potentially say, when you're saying to yourself inside your head, I'm the adult in the room, what is it you're actually saying?
So, yeah, that concept of adult actually contains a number of really important concepts, which, when I say that narrative, I'm unconsciously thinking about.
So yes.
When we talk about I am the adult, basically from a self-worth perspective, we're saying, actually, I'm a valuable human being that has strengths and capabilities and has something of value to bring to this situation. So that's one side of it.
Okay? Yes.
The other side of it, which is really important, because this is where we get the power balance or the power imbalance, is actually we validate the other human beings in the room as well. So it's, I'm okay, I'm enough as a human being, they're okay, they're adults as well. So when I'm saying I'm an adult, it's coming from this perspective of the mindset of I'm okay, you're okay, and there's a power balance there. So there's no unhealthy self or to other person comparisons. that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So that's one way of doing this, is to have some reflection prompts, whatever those reflections prompts might be. Yeah. And so it might be, for example, where am I doing this job, but I'm not owning the role. That could be one prompt you use if you know this is the sort of mask you tend to wear. Or what, as you said, what's the story I'm telling myself about why I don't belong here? Any prompt like that is a useful prompt to start to make the shift. What about other micro practices, Rich, that we could use?
So two very simple micro practices, and it might sound like really obvious common sense, but I used to do this, I can share a story actually where I did this, is to prepare yourself before you go into the room.
Okay.
So don't wait to do the mantra stuff or the, you know, stepping into your connected center. Don't wait till you're in the room and under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so prepare yourself before you go into the room. I've shared this story before about a room full of senior people where I was walking up the stairs and I was self-managing before I got into the room. Yeah. I was saying to myself, I'm the adult. I've been paid to be the facilitator. I know my stuff around this topic. So I was shaping that in my head in a healthy, non-arrogant way. So prepare before the meeting. Then I think after a meeting, where you've been in a situation where you've allowed the self-doubter mask to be raised in an unhealthy way, is to reflect, you know, why didn't I inhabit my authority in that context? What was going on for me? Was there some aspect of my capability that I felt challenged by? Was I unhealthily projecting something onto the other person? You know, what was going on there, sort of internally and externally for me?
A really interesting point you just made there, Rich, is when you were talking about preparing yourself and you've got these sort of affirmations, for want of a better word, that you're telling yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
I think
the
important thing for listeners is that it's not arrogant, because Rich is basing those affirmations on what's realistic. So he has got the skill. He's not pretending he's got skills he hasn't. He has got the skills. He has got the experience. He has got the qualities to be able to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
I think arrogance is where you're kidding yourself. You're far, far better than you actually are. And that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Yeah, because there are other masks on our confidence compass, and the pretender is one of those masks. and that's a good example where we're stepping into a capability that we don't actually have, and that's not good either.
No.
You know, because that's arrogance and pretense and performative.
But a good affirmation will be based on reality, but it would also stretch you a little bit as well. It's not sitting in your comfort zone.
Yes, exactly.
But it has got some grounding in actual reality, which is where I think, going back to what you said, you need the self-awareness to know, where are my strengths? Where are the things I'm not so good at? Where's my weaknesses, if you want a better word for it? That self-awareness is really important when you build these affirmations, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So any last thoughts, Rich? There's some good micro practices, some good ways of helping to shift from self-doubt into a more grounded sense of authority. Any sort of last tips for people?
Yeah, I think it's important to realise that when the mask comes up, you know, you're not being stupid, you're not being daft, it's normal. The danger is when the mask becomes unconscious and it's driven by unhealthy projections or fears. So it's to bring the mask out in the open, shine a light on it. And when we step back into our connected centre and we own who we are and what we bring to that situation, that's when we can then remove the mask. But it might be that the mask comes up and it's telling us something genuine that we need to take notice of. So it's about self-awareness and self-management, basically.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so if you're listening to this episode today and you're realizing, well, yeah, that's me, I'm in a role, but I'm not fully owning it, then I do hope today's conversation between Rich and I has done one of two things for you. First, I hope it normalizes the experience, because you're absolutely not alone. There are a lot of people out there experiencing something similar. And secondly, I hope it gives you a way of thinking differently about it, to see your confidence as a pattern that you can understand and, crucially, a story that you can rewrite. And I think that's the point, Rich, that you made,
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you'd like to go deeper into your own confidence compass and find out more about your profile, explore these quadrant masks in a lot more depth, and we've touched on especially the self-doubter mask today, our new Forwards Within Our Confidence pathway is now live. You can find out more about that by the links in the show notes or by contacting Rich and I via LinkedIn as well. In the next episode, we'll shift from your inner authority to how that authority plays out through others, how confident leaders create belief and ownership in their teams without either gripping too tight or over-controlling them. But for today, Rich, thank you for sharing, and for everybody else, thank you for listening. If today's episode has struck a chord, please share it with someone that you might know that might need to hear it. Please give us a 5-star rating on your podcast channel, because this really helps us to get reach and inspire more leaders. Every week we send out a newsletter called Foresight, containing top tips from each episode. There's also a book recommendation, a thought to reflect on, and some practical takeaways that you can apply in your day-to-day life. Visit zentanogroup.com/podcast, add your name to our mailing list. But for today, thank you for listening.